What did Jesus mean when he talked about the outer darkness? Well, that's what we're going to talk about on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, before we go on, I have to tell you what is going on right now. Today is the start of our National Bible Conference, which is happening in Coppell, Texas. Even though the conference has begun, we don't want you to miss out on a single moment. You can find out how you can join us through live stream by going to faithalone.org and clicking on events. Well, let's jump right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Welcome to Grace in Focus. My name's Sean Lazar.
Hi, I'm Bob Wilkin.
We have a question from Linus. There's something in Scripture called the outer darkness.
And it's not exactly in Scripture. It's in Matthew's Gospel only.
Oh, Matthew's Gospel only. And so there's a question about what is this outer darkness? That's what Linus is asking. Now, most people think the outer darkness is always a reference to eternal condemnation, right? It's always a reference to the lake of fire or what a lot of people call hell. That's not your view.
No.
Here's Linus's question. I could not find, it's more of a statement, I guess, the scriptures that would prove your claim that the outer darkness is not a reference to hell / lake of fire. Is what you teach a form of Protestant purgatory that certain saints still suffer in the afterlife?
Okay, the short answer is no. For one thing, we have a whole book where Zane Hodges and I are interacting back and forth, and I ask him questions and he answers them. Isn't it called The Outer Darkness?
I think it's called What is the Outer
what
Darkness?
What is the Outer Darkness?
And I'll tell you what, use the code OUTER50. You can get Outer Darkness for 50% off at our website. Use the code OUTER50, and you can get our book, Outer Darkness, for 50% off.
All right. Another resource I would point the listeners to, I was just reading this yesterday. About 2 or 3 years ago, I wrote an article in response to a friend of mine, J. Paul Tanner, who had written an article for BibSac, Dallas Seminary's journal, arguing that the outer darkness refers to eternal condemnation. Mm-hmm. Go to faithalone.org and look under resources and then journal. There's a search icon there where you click on the magnifying glass and just type in outer darkness and you'll see my response to J. Paul Tanner. I'll give a summary of it now.
Okay.
The expression the outer darkness occurs in three places in Matthew. Matthew chapter 8, Matthew chapter 22, and Matthew chapter 25. The words the outer darkness are a translation of the Greek. Probably a better translation would be the darkness outside. Now, in all three of these cases, there is some sort of celebration going on that the person cast into the darkness outside misses out on. In Matthew 8, it's some sort of a feast that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are taking part in the kingdom. In Matthew 8:11, and I say to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. This sitting down alludes to a feast, a banquet.
Right, and they're in the kingdom of heaven, it says.
Right, but the sons of the kingdom will be cast out into the outer darkness, or the darkness outside. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And so I would argue that that refers to missing out on the joys associated with this feast. And I think this is figurative language to refer to ruling with Christ in the life to come. But even if it's a banquet that people are excluded from, it's not purgatory. It's not some sort of 1,000 years in Gehenna or in Sheol. It's simply a person who is going to miss out on that. And the same thing in Matthew 22.
Well, before we move on, because it says there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And I'm sure a lot of people, when they hear that phrase, they automatically think of being like tortured by devils or something in hell. That's reading way more than what it's saying.
Right. Weeping and gnashing of teeth is an expression of grief.
Right.
And all it's saying is at the judgment seat of Christ, there will be shame and grief for the believer who is not an overcomer. And we find that in other passages. For example, 1 John 2:28, my little children abide in him so that when he appears, we may have confidence and might not shrink back in shame at his coming. Now, Matthew 10, 32 and 33, Jesus says, "He who confesses me before men, him will I confess before my Father who is in heaven.
Right.
He who denies me, him I will deny before my Father who is in heaven."
Right.
And Jesus also said, "Whoever is ashamed of me in this sinful and adulterous generation, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him
right.
when he returns." The idea of believers experiencing shame at the judgment seat of Christ is present. Not only do we find in Matthew 8 this expression, but look at Matthew 22. There it's the parable of the wedding feast. The issue is who gets to participate in the wedding feast and who doesn't. There's someone at the wedding feast who is not dressed properly. And so this person is cast into the outer darkness, and there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth again. Tanner argues that this person is an unbeliever because he's cast into the outer darkness, and also because he's bound hand and foot. But the point is, in the Old Testament, binding hand and foot is not an expression of eternal condemnation, nor is outer darkness. In fact, he couldn't find an example of outer darkness anywhere else in the Bible, Old or New Testament, or even in apocryphal literature. There's nothing about outer darkness. So he found a place in an apocryphal book where a fallen angel is stuck in a hole in the desert, and then rocks are put over him so that now that implies he's in darkness because he's under these rocks in this hole in the desert.
And that was the closest analogy?
That was the closest analogy that Tanner could find. I don't think it fits at all, but the idea of darkness is used in the Old Testament to refer to judgment and to loss. This idea of darkness outside here refers to missing out on this blessing. Now, Tanner implies that those who receive the calling to come to the wedding are people who get into the kingdom. But yet the man that's improperly dressed is not one of the people who rejected the invitation.
Right.
There were multitudes that rejected the invitation. Most of Israel rejected the invitation. But here's a man who comes and is present. And he takes it that this wedding feast is taking place during the beginning of the millennium.
Okay.
Well, that means this man is there at the beginning of the millennium.
Right.
Well, how can he be an unbeliever? Why is he in the kingdom?
Right.
He's ultimately got this man being judged with an unbeliever in the midst of believers. So is the judgment seat of Christ for believers and unbelievers? That would seem to be what that view is.
All right, so just to recap. So in Matthew chapter 8, they're sitting down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they're in the kingdom of heaven. And so the outer darkness is not a darkness outside of the kingdom of heaven. It's a darkness outside of wherever they're sitting down. That's
right. It's a figure of speech for missing out on the joys associated with sitting down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
And then in Matthew 22, same idea. There's a wedding hall. It's in the kingdom, obviously. There are guests. And the person expecting to eat at that table, they're like, no, you're dressed improperly. And he gets kicked out of the darkness outside, too. But it's the darkness outside of the wedding hall again.
And by the way, notice the person who's sent to the outer darkness in Matthew 8. It's the sons of the kingdom, which Tanner admits would refer to people who were born again. But Tanner says that the Lord is speaking sarcastically here. And he's saying that what Jesus means is these are not sons of the kingdom.
Right.
And what I argue is that's exactly the opposite of what Jesus says.
Yeah.
There's no hint here that he's speaking sarcastically. And by the way, this expression, the sons of the kingdom, only occurs one other time in Matthew. And that's in the parable of the wheat and the tares. Mm. And we're told the wheat are the sons of the kingdom. In Matthew 22, the person who's sent to the outer darkness is someone who accepted the invitation to be in the wedding.
Right.
And was present in the wedding celebration.
Right.
So that suggests we're talking about a believer. And then the third passage in Matthew 25, 14 through 30, it's the parable of the talents. In that one, we have three servants judged. And they're judged according to the work they've done. And the first two here, well done, and they're made rulers. And this makes it very clear that the issue is ruling versus not ruling.
Right.
And the third one is not given any rulership. his talent is taken away from him, and that refers to the city he would be ruling over. Then Jesus says, everyone who has more will be given, but the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. In other words, you're going to have believers who in this life are highly exalted. They'll be first in this life in the church age, but they're going to be last in the kingdom.
Mm.
And then he says, and cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So again, the person cast into the outer darkness is one of Jesus' servants. By the way, why would, and this is the problem with Tanner's view, why would an unbeliever be present at the judgment seat of Christ with two believers? Of course, I think what Tanner's view is that the parable of the talents refers to the judgment seat of Christ and the great white throne judgment, which are separated by 1,000 years, but somehow the Lord compresses this and makes it seem like one judgment.
Okay.
Well, that's not the case. There's two separate judgments. The judgment of believers takes place before the millennium. The judgment of unbelievers takes place afterwards. So I would argue in all three passages, the issue is ruling with Christ, which is clearly brought out in the Matthew 25 passage, and it is abundance of life forever. The issue is not anybody going to purgatory.
It's eternal rewards.
It's eternal rewards.
And it's the experience of sadness and maybe shame when you find out that, no, you get excluded from this reward.
Right. But that shame and sadness will be short-lived. I doubt it'll live more than a few seconds because these people will have glorified bodies and they will get over their grief quickly. But the consequences of that are going to go on. They're not going to be ruling with Christ.
What we don't see here is the traditional trappings of the lake of fire or of hell or of demons. This is not Catholic purgatory at all.
And it's not Protestant purgatory.
And it's not, nor is it Protestant purgatory. Well, thanks for that, Bob. If you have any questions about the Bible or theology or what we just said, please send us an email at radio@faithalone.org. And remember, for a limited time, use the code OUTER50 in order to get 50% off Bob's book, which you wrote with Zane Hodges, called What is the Outer Darkness?
Thank you guys for that great discussion. Did you miss an episode of Grace and Focus that you really wanted to hear? Just come to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. And we have all our past episodes right there on the site. In addition to this, we have all kinds of other free resources available for you. It's all designed to help you mature and grow in your understanding of Scripture. So come visit us at faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. On this program, we keep our requests for financial partners to a minimum. But if you are interested in becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus, you can find out how to do that also at faithalone.org. Our team is really great about answering questions, comments, and feedback. If you've got some, we hope to hear from you. Let me give you our email address so you can do just that. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk about how God preserves His Word. So join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.